Reporting on politics and public policy is supported by the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. A bill that allows concealed handguns without a permit now awaits Governor Kristi Noem's signature after passing through the state legislature. We'll discuss that and more with the Dakota Political Junkies today. Joining us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City, former South Dakota lawmaker and member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame, Noel Hamel. Noel, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And joining us on the phone, Madison Daily Leader publisher John Hunter. John, welcome. Thanks for being here as well.
Hi, Lori. I'm glad to be here.
All right. Let's start with this concealed permitless handgun legislation, because there's quite a conversation going on about different bills that are coming forward. There's actually five firearms-related bills making their way for State House. And the ones that are getting the most attention, Senate Bill 47 and House Bill 1112. John Hunter, where do you want to begin with this sort of conversation about concealed carry? Because it all ties in to a long-term effort, and having a new governor in South Dakota might make all the difference for proponents of these bills.
It does. I think it's. I think these kinds of ideas have been percolating a little bit, and then and Governor Noem has indicated her support for these kind of things, and so I think they're all kind of rushing into the legislature now. 47 and you know, concealed carry has always has been a part of South Dakota. This is essentially to have be able to do that without a permit. So they're calling it a permitless concealed carry. So you know, people can buy guns, conceal them, go into all sorts of places. And so it is I think, right up the alley of the classic gun argument that's been going on for a couple of centuries in the United States and will continue. Does it reduce or increase violence if more people carry guns, and if it's easier to get, and so on? So some people always will continue to argue that criminals can get guns and wouldn't follow a rule of carrying a laminated card that said you went through the 12 background checklist. They're all trying to do the same thing, I think, to a degree, is to liberalize gun carrying rules. This would be the time to do it, I think, with Governor Noem there. But she has, and she supports that sort of thing, but she's, I think, smart enough to say that I'm going to look at the specific bill and the specific language before she commits to supporting it.
Right. And Noel, important in that language is the notion of whether this law applies to citizens of South Dakota, South Dakota residents, I should say, or people from out of state. And that's really the key difference between Senate Bill 47, which is allows anyone to carry a concealed weapon without a permit, and House Bill 1112, which limits that ability to people who are residents of South Dakota. How important do you think this distinction is? And, you know, how do you sort of see it unfolding?
Well, you know, the 47 has been passed out. Both the Senate and the House voted for it. And I think that, you know, I was looking at the support that bill got. Interestingly, and I'll talk about House Bill 1112, but the one that passed out of the Senate and the House, you know, it passed out of the Senate 2-1, 23-11. And it passed out of the House 47-23, again, kind of a 2-1 margin. But if you think about the overwhelming numerical majority the Republicans have, you can see that a fair number of Republicans opposed this bill, both in the Senate and the House. And there's a reason for that. If you look at the political spectrum in South Dakota, it's a long one. It's a broad one. I mean, you have, if you look at the Republicans in both the Senate and the House that voted against Senate Bill 47, you'll see that there were a lot of lawmakers who, for lack of a better word, moderate to liberal Republicans, many of them in the southeast part of the state, and many women lawmakers voted against that bill. And then on the other end, you had a more predictable vote in favor of it, you know, including the sponsors. I think for folks that worry about the Republican-dominated legislature, this sort of demonstrates that, boy, there is a wide disagreement on some of these controversial issues, and I'm not just talking about the gun issue. I mean, I'm sure we'll have a chance to talk about the abortion bill or the transparency bill. Some of these issues, you know, the Republican Party is a long way from unanimous consent in these bills. Now, HB 112, I think you're right. When that gets further down the road, I think the governor is going to take a look at that and try to determine how important the key difference is. And you've already described it, Lori. It's anybody in the state or people coming into the state, there's going to have to be some reconciliation. But let me ask you this question. Weren't there even other bills besides House Bill 1112 and Senate Bill 47 in the mix?
Yep, there are three more. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but one is sort of looking at concealed carry on a snowmobile, for example, and sort of, you know, dealing with, you know, and then there was something Sheriff Mike Milstead from Minnehaha County mentioned, one that dealt with age limits and juveniles carry concealed weapons as well. So there's a lot of conversation. And John Hunter, you know, speaking broadly about sort of these political, you know, conversations back and forth at peer, are there political consequences then to some of these votes from, you know, within the Republican Party, for example?
Absolutely. I think in some cases on some issues, there's probably, you could almost call two Republican parties in the legislature. We have this kind of right and middle kind of wings. And so, yes, I think those will bump up several times. And I was in Pierre last week and talking to a legislator who, you know, just almost thinks of a far wing of that party as a different party, meaning, you know, this is a group and that's what they want and we're going to oppose this and so on. So in some cases, I think you have kind of three different groups in Pierre. On the other hand, it varies much by topic, and Noel alluded to that. There's going to be other topics that don't have that at all, that'll be kind of straight party line, or it'll cross party lines. So I've always commended the South Dakota legislature for being a little bit more reasonable, a little less partisan than many other state legislatures, and I still believe that's true. But I do think this, with a gubernatorial change, I think there's a wing of the Republican Party that says now is the time to pounce on some of these things that we've been holding back.
Right. That brings us to our next topic of conversation, which is this lobbyist, Yvonne Taylor. She's with the South Dakota Municipal League, and she wrote a column that criticized some of the people who were in Pierre. She called them wackies, in quotations. I use that word. And she was banned from the floor by Stephen Haugard. And a lawsuit was filed, and now she's been allowed to go back on the floor. But as we talk about the sort of the implications of that back and forth, Noel, what do you think this sort of means? It kind of gets at this idea of there being what some people perceive to be fringe groups and the consequences of speaking out about that.
I don't think the consequences are going to be great. I think that, I mean, Yvonne Taylor has been around for a long time as director of the Municipal League. She's, I think, probably more than 20 years. She's very knowledgeable. She's strong. She's outspoken. I thought it was the wrong move for the speaker to take the action that he did. You know, if you're in politics, you have to be a little thick-skinned. I read that as him trying to stand up for his, you know, his peers in the legislature. Nobody likes to be criticized. Where I would differ with the Municipal League director is, you know, I just hate to see name-calling part of the dialogue. And if you're going to write something and refer to lawmakers as wackies, why, you know, that's probably a little beneath her and the language that's useful. I think if she wants to disagree on policy with the legislature or say that some are more qualified than others, that's fine. But I'm just sort of think that name-calling in that dialogue is something that could be done without. But the long-term consequences, unless they decide to change the rules, and he does have, they do have the right to set guidelines for when lobbyists can come on the floor and when they can't. But what they can't do, I'm quite sure, is discriminate against a particular lobbyist, which was the intention here, unless that lobbyist shows some behavior that's way, way out of the mainstream, and that didn't happen either.
John Hunter, any insight as far as how, as this moves forward and there, you know, appears that there's a settlement perhaps in the works as people, you know, are not commenting too much on where it's at now. What does this mean for the future? Do you think we're looking at a rule change? Does it go back to, is there a chilling effect? How do you see the impact?
I don't think there's going to be a long-term impact either, and I'm with Noel on some of these things. She may have said something that was, sort of a name-calling, but I stand firmly on the side of free speech and our ability to write freedom of the press and so on. This was in the Municipal League publication that was sent to the members. Any kind of retaliation for criticizing the legislature, I think, is inappropriate. On the other hand, I do believe that there can be consequences when you say or write something for that, and this maybe isn't it was the first one that they could think of, maybe, but I would think the other issue with that is that if you criticize a legislator or a group of legislators, then they may listen to you a little bit less, and then you might, your constituency may not get their message to the legislature quite the way it would like. So I think there continues to be a balance, but you have to earn a reputation and appear as a lobbyist you can trust or that you can work well with and so on. So I think you do need to use some guidelines of your own to while expressing your feelings.
Let's look at some of the sureties and surprises of this session so far. I think we all sort of expected concealed carry without permits to be a topic of discussion. A lot of us were hearing early on that abortion legislation and bills regarding abortion conversations with women and their doctors was going to be a big thing. And that has sort of, that legislation has been defeated already at this point. Noel, any surprises there about the abortion conversation or other conversations that took you by surprise at this point in the session?
Well, again, the abortion bill is another example, sort of like the gun legislation. I think that got killed in committee, and I think the vote was something like 5-2. And if you look at who voted yes, Senators DeSanto and Senators Jensen, who most of us would characterize as being right of center, and then the people that voted to kill the bill, including Steinhauer of Sioux Falls and Solano of Rapid City, Republicans. Soholt from, I think she's a registered nurse. You got former Judge Art Rush from Vermilion. I mean, you've got what could fairly be called the left-of-center Republicans voting to kill that bill. So again, that illustrates that the Republican Party spectrum is a long one. And so I think for those who thought that since we have a more socially conservative governor, if you want to make that comparison between Governor Noem and Governor Dugard, and some do make that comparison, that this would be the year to introduce what's commonly known as social issues. We've seen that hasn't been successful.
John Hunter, also the transgender sports policy revision died as well. Jim Boland spoke about that, and lawmakers decided to not that. Are there surprises for you that you sort of thought some of these had traction that in the end they didn't have? Or are you looking at lawmakers focusing more intently on sort of key issues this session, such as concealed carry and others that they can really get more people behind? How do you see this sort of playing out right now?
Well, I think you see a little bit more of this sort of thing, either kind of big philosophical issues that matter very strongly to people, and in the early part of the session, and then later on, they're going to get down to kind of budgetary stuff, and that's going to be more the Medicaid reimbursement and aid to education and all those kind of things, because a lot of these things are kind of working their way slowly through the appropriations process. So now is really the time when you're going to see these. I think they won't be there at the end, and some of them, like Jim Boland's the transgender bill to take that authority away from the South Dakota Activities Association, High School Activities Association, I think are early on. So I don't think there is much of a surprise as to these types of issues, especially with a new governor, that I think things that, you know, a lot of these will get a hearing every year. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of them. The transgender thing, I think, is, again, I think just a philosophical thing between, is the legislature going to set the rules for these kinds of things, or is there going to be some kind of delegation of that authority? And currently it's been delegated to the Activities Association. So the question is, will it take it back? And I think legislators said, no, I don't think we should take it back at this time.
There's another bill, Noel, House Bill 1108, which deals with gender identity, and it's an act to prohibit gender identity instruction in public schools. Very short, basically saying no instruction in gender identity or gender expression may be provided to any student in kindergarten through grade 7 in any public school in the state. So the conversation around gender identity, transgender students and people in general still is causing some conversation in peer.
Well, I agree with John. I think it'll be short-lived. When you get into some of those issues, I think a lot of lawmakers would just as soon let the local school boards make those decisions. You know, and besides that, what does instruction mean? I mean, is it part of the curriculum? Is it part of a unit? What exactly are we talking about here? But my guess is that bill won't find any more success than did the Boland bill. Incidentally, Senator Boland said at a press conference last week, and John was there too, he wasn't particularly surprised. The Republicans on the committee voted it down. Only he and I think Senator Jensen voted for it. But in talking to Senator Solano later, he said, the Activities Association has a process. If they found that an athlete was going to identify simply to have an advantage in a sport, they would nip that in the bud. But he also said, but we told the Activities Association we are watching carefully how they handle it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, to kind of echo what John said, the legislature apparently doesn't want to step in on that, at least not at this point.
And John, we mentioned earlier something about, you know, columns and people speaking out in newspapers. The Argus Leader wrote published an editorial about what lawmakers should be tackling and what they shouldn't. And in that category, let's talk about making the accordion the South Dakota state instrument. This is a House Bill 1156. Well, yeah. And this is one of those things. I think we had Chislik last year. There's been some Senate resolutions that have been sort of controversial. So, John, do you want to talk about the accordion, or do you want to talk about just
we got to spend a lot more time on this.
What is the business, and how does that sort of play in the public when they see a bill like that coming forward?
Well, Representative Steve McCleary said he think, why not the guitar or the trombone? I mean, all those of us who play the trombone feel a little slighted here.
I play trombone too. Should we get let's get our trombones and go to peer.
So do the Republicans like trombones or the Democrats? I don't know yet.
It's a nonpartisan instrument, I think.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Bless you. So the fiddle is kind of in there had its run. The accordion, of course, is kind of, I think, a tip of the hat to Myron Florin, who was an accordionist on the Lawrence Welk show for a long time, and And so, yeah, I mean, they can spend time on this if they choose, but I think most South Dakotans say, well, let's move on to something else.
Noel, any thoughts on what should be really taken up? Because in the broader sense, there have been a lot of resolutions that have come up, and people have submitted some of the same criticism of saying this is not even the role of the state legislature. What's your take on that?
I hope that they spend quite a bit of time on Medicaid. I have read quite a bit about the nursing home. I think it could be rightfully called a crisis. I mean, of a town, John, your town of Madison, what, 7,200
right.
people is losing its nursing home? And we have, I don't know, 17 or 18 others on the cusp. I dearly hope that the lawmakers drill down into the Medicaid issue. And, you know, the coverage pretty much has said, well, South Dakota doesn't get enough Medicaid reimbursement. That's why the homes are going under, which I'm sure is a factor. But I have yet to see any discussion really on other things that come into play as far as why these homes are failing. And there are other factors, Lori, in my judgment, but I just hope that they give that issue the time and effort that it deserves.
Our time is short, Noel, but do you want to sort of bullet point some of those issues that you think are worth being part of the conversation?
Well, sure. I mean, the efficiency of nursing home, what percentage of the expense overhead goes, say, to corporate, if they're corporately owned? Are they siphoning off money to be used for non-nursing home purposes? I'd like to know about the census of nursing homes. We have from 50 to 66% on Medicaid, and yet it strikes me as a little bit unusual that that high of a percentage of people going into nursing homes are really indigent. What does that say about the people that are maybe, you know, avoiding the five-year look back so that they can be on Medicaid instead of self-pay? A third factor that I've been told by people that were in the business is that a lot of people are in assisted living longer than the requirements actually permit, but the state is not enforcing those because assisted living, as everybody knows, is less than half the cost of being in a nursing home. Huh. So those are areas that maybe that research is being done, and maybe I just haven't seen it in the coverage. But certainly, there's more to this story than just Medicaid reimbursement.
Noel Hamill and John Hunter, thank you so much for the conversation today. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lori.
Thanks for having us, Lori.